Today, do you love Donald Trump? If so, could you be close to someone who detests him? Or if you're not so keen, would you develop a friendship with one of his biggest fans? Karen Ward and Karen Cotter live in the town of Bloomsburg, Pennsylvania. And there is one thing on which they really don't agree.
He's done well for the economy, gotten the unemployment way down. I think he's done well for peace in the Middle East, securing our borders.
He's a menace to society and a dangerous human being.
Donald Trump does tend to divide opinion. Karen Ward loves what he stands for.
He wants to do good things for our country, and he does put America first.
Karen Cotter is not so sure.
An undiagnosed narcissist with sociopathic tendencies.
There is something about these two Karens that is pretty symbolic of America right now. Such passionately opposing views are being repeated across the whole of the country. Where visceral feelings about Donald Trump brought out record numbers in what has become the most divisive election in recent history. But despite their differences, Karen Ward and Karen Cotter have become close friends and believe there is a way to heal the political rift that has torn so many American communities apart. From The Guardian, I'm Anushka Astana. Today in Focus, can friendship trump politics? Michael, how did you get involved in this? Tell me about what made you decide to do this piece.
Well, I guess I, like everybody else, was processing this American election through social media. And I think I found myself, particularly compared to previous elections, just really sick of it, really sick of the kind of fractious, divisive tone of it all, feeling like, does it have to be this way? Full of this sort of assumption that the other side are completely crazy and bad in some sense. And I think both sides feel that way about each other. And so it got me thinking, are there people who are able to sustain friendships, relationships across this increasingly deep political divide?
So you set out to find people who would achieve that. And after quite a long search, you found Karen Cotter and Karen Ward, who both live in a place called Bloomsburg, Pennsylvania. Tell me a bit about it. What's it like there?
It's got a fairly cosmopolitan centre. There's a university there. But then once you go beyond the downtown area, it quickly becomes a very rural part of the country. It's actually just down the road from Scranton, which is where Joe Biden is from, and he has elevated into a kind of mythic status. You know, this is like classic American small town, you know, real America.
Scranton, Pennsylvania. Here, success isn't handed down. It's forged with sweat, grit, and determination. This is his hometown.
And the Karens described it as an area of rolling hills, a lot of farmland. And they said it had a massive annual fair, actually the largest in the state. It sounded, well, in equal parts, amazing and terrifying.
Every year we have the state fair, the Bloomsburg State Fair. You know what, Michael? Lots of deep fried food, like deep fried Oreos, deep fried, I don't even know, butter, pickles. I mean, you name it.
They're fried.
Oh, I know one. Deep fried Snicker bars with bacon wrapped around it. I mean, we're not a healthy bunch.
Oh, and then this year, this is the first year they've ever had to cancel the fair because of COVID.
God, I wonder if closing the state fair and preventing people from eating that food may have saved more lives than the pandemic itself.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So a place that is cosmopolitan and suburban in parts, but also very rural in others. Which of these two worlds did the Karens grow up in?
So both the Karens grew up in a rural part of Pennsylvania. Karen Ward actually moved to Bloomsburg later in life, but Karen Cotter grew up nearby.
I grew up on a farm, and my family had, we had pigs and cows, and it was kind of a very connected to your roots type of growing up. If we had a problem rooster that was running around, my parents would pick it up and put their foot on the head of the rooster and just twist it and kill it right in front of us. I mean, it was that kind of growing up.
I can imagine that would have made quite an impression on you to see a rooster dealt with like that.
Yeah, I'm not much of a farm girl, and I guess maybe that's the reason why.
And they live in the middle of a state that was the final piece of the jigsaw in this election. It all came down to Pennsylvania, once solidly Democratic, and then it swung to Trump in 2016. And this time was incredibly close, with Biden eventually winning after that slow count of postal votes. It almost feels as if it was the epicenter of American division. And as we've heard, the Karens encapsulate that quite neatly. One of them, Karen Cotter, is a liberal, a Democrat, and the other, Karen Ward, a strong supporter of Donald Trump. Have they always held these political beliefs?
No, actually, they've both made pretty profound political journeys over their lifetimes and actually crossed paths in a way. Karen Ward's father worked in a steel mill in southwest Pennsylvania.
My dad was one of 12 kids, and pretty sure their entire family, because of either being in farm work or coal mines, steel mills, driving, truck for hauling gravel and things like that, they were all blue collar working class and were all Democrats, actually.
But she says that the values that led her father to vote Democrat were things like respect, obedience for authority. And those values led her into a more conservative outlook on life. She became a police officer in Philadelphia. And over time, she found herself identifying with the Republican Party, including in 2016 when she became a vocal and enthusiastic Trump supporter.
Did she say what it was that really attracted her to him in particular?
She described herself as a Christian. So it seemed to me a key part of what she believes are about values and importance of encouraging nuclear families. I think she feels like American culture has changed in ways that are not positive, and that leadership is needed from the top to try to restore it. She was clear that she didn't find Donald Trump to be someone who she naturally warmed to, but she believed that the values he represented, the things that he fought for, were her values. And more importantly, that he can actually legislate them. He can actually act on the things that she believes in.
He, always wanted to do something to, help the people in America. And I really feel that no matter what, people think of him, that he really, truly has the people in our country, their best interests at heart.
What about Karen Cotter?
She says that her childhood had quite a profound influence on her politics, although not in the way that I was expecting. She says she grew up around a lot of racism.
So I think that definitely informed who I became as an adult. And I kind of had to reorder my thinking in order to get out of that mode. My dad used to refer to Black people as spear chuckers. And, so that at the time, was, I didn't know what that meant. As I grew up, of course, I grew to realize that that was racist.
And she said her mother had also been brought up surrounded by racist ideas.
My mom grew up in Puerto Rico. She told me that the dream of little Puerto Rican girls was to come to the mainland of the United States and marry a white man. It's that kind of thinking that led me to think that there was this idea that people of color were less than. But again, those kinds of thoughts did not mature in me until later in life.
Do you mean to say that when they matured, you carried that worldview for a time in your life?
I think I carried that. Yeah, I don't think I could help but carry that. I don't think it was a conscious thing, but it wasn't until I was in college into my 20s that that I started to realize what I had been carrying around with me.
What made you realize that?
I think the main thing was a class that I took in African literature. And the reading of the stories of a lot of these African writers, Chinua Achebe and Bessie Head and other people. And so, yeah, that was kind of a turning point for me. I think that's when I started to question authority and, you know, people with power and how they wielded their power, especially against vulnerable populations and things like that.
Did it put you at odds with your parents? How did they feel about you having these new views of the world?
Yeah, I don't think that I talked about those things much at the time, but certainly now, yeah. Oh yeah, I'm in conflict with a lot of my family now.
Karen Cotter emerged from university a very different person. Did she return to Bloomsburg?
She didn't. She stuck around Washington, D.C., which was where she had studied, and she started to build her life there. And this is something that has been happening on a much larger scale. They talk in the U.S. of something called the Big Sort, which is that people are increasingly living in places where they're surrounded by others who hold the same political views as them. So someone who has more liberal views would live in a city like Washington, D.C., whereas those who have more conservative views inevitably will hang around in smaller cities or live in rural places like Bloomsburg.
Okay, sometimes people tend to move in that direction, but sometimes they move in the opposite way. And that, in fact, was what Karen Cotter did. She moved back home to Bloomsburg 10 years ago. And in my mind, the last decade has been a period in which we've seen significant divisions start to emerge all over the world, really, with the kind of widening political divide, but especially in the US. Give me a sense of how we got to where we are today.
Philosophers talk about Americans overdoing democracy, allowing politics to get into every part of their lives, and increasingly, people don't have friends who vote on the other side. And more than that, they can't imagine how anyone could support Donald Trump, could support Joe Biden. These things go from being disagreements to being different lifestyles, to being different tribes. And according to a study from April this year, these American political divisions are as bad today as they were in 1860. And of course, that was the year that the country had a civil war.
That's amazing. Has a similar thing played out in Bloomsburg over the course of the decade?
Well, one thing that the Karens told me about Bloomsburg was that it wasn't immune to this increasingly coarse political culture, especially since the election of Donald Trump. They told me about the local radio station, WHLM, and they said that one of the presenters, in fact, the son of the owner of the station, decided to interview the organizer of the Unite the Right rally, which was that rally you might remember with the tiki torches from Charlottesville in 2017. And this caused outrage in Bloomsburg.
So all of these people have shown up with their signs saying, you know what, we're going to stop hate and we're not going to allow this to continue in our community. There's plenty of people who are beeping horns and standing up. Can we see your signs, ladies?
And at about the same time, there was a big dispute about a wedding dress shop in the town.
The owners of the bridal shop did not want to sell a wedding dress or wedding dresses to a lesbian couple. So what ended up happening was a large protest.
Karen Ward said she could remember feeling conflicted about the whole thing. She didn't know which side to take.
Actually, the two women were my physician and nurse. So I knew them and I liked them. I thought they were a good doctor and good nurse team. But yet again, as a Christian, I empathized with the people that were running the bridal shop. I didn't know them personally, but people in my church did. So I was kind of torn.
but others in the town were more polarized. It became a really toxic issue. It was reported that the owners of the store received death threats.
Sign outside WW Bridal on Market Street in Bloomsburg says open, but the door is locked. The bridal shop is currently only accepting appointments and not walk-in customers. The owners have been getting death threats because of their policy of refusing customers shopping for same-sex weddings.
I don't agree with them at all. I mean, whatever makes people happy, it makes people happy.
They have the right to say no. If the people comes there, doesn't they don't like it, they can go someplace else.
And at this point, with these two extremely bitter disputes playing out in the town, Karen Cotter, that's the liberal Karen, felt like things were getting out of control.
I felt like not only are we not understanding each other, we can't even talk to each other about these problems that we're facing. I felt like, boy, this if I don't do something here, I was fearful of violence. I thought, you know, we have to start talking about this as communities and as a nation. So that was the climate that I decided to write a letter to the editor of the local paper.
Well, the letter was a call out to people with very different political beliefs to meet together in an attempt to overcome the growing divisions within their town. And it was the letter that brought the Karens together and started an unlikely friendship between two women who, on paper, should have had absolutely nothing in common. One who was a liberal, who had spent much of her life in Washington, D.C., and who detested Donald Trump. And the other, a deeply religious former police officer, who believes in everything the president stands for. They met in a coffee shop called The Fog and Flame, and somewhat to each other's surprise, they got on. So they met up again, and again. And then they came up with a plan to improve the atmosphere in their town, to start more conversations between people with bitterly opposing views. Although, as they were getting to know each other, they began by completely avoiding talking about politics.
We were talking about our families, personal things, I think, which kind of bonded us.
Mm-hmm. Karen Cotter said that she had some kind of personal issue. She didn't want to go into it, but she said that it was something very close to home. It was really affecting her. And she found that in Karen Ward, she had someone who was there for her, who actually she recognized cared for her and helped her through this crisis.
I just knew that I had met a lifelong friend right then.
I know they found a national organization called Braver Angels that was doing a similar thing, trying to bridge political divides and bring people together. And they became regional organisers for them. But you said that in their own friendship, they avoided discussing their opposing political views, at least to start with. Did there come a point when that changed?
Well, they said it took them about a year.
Our relationship progressed, and I think when it really, really got interesting was when we began to be able to talk about politics, the real down and dirty conversations.
And once they got into them, how did they go about it practically? How should we all talk to each other about politics?
Well, there's a whole suite of skills that they brought to bear on this, but one of the really simple ones is actively listening to the other person. So treating a conversation not as a competition, not as a sort of contest to see who can persuade the other person, but actually a partnership. Like, we're going to sit here and learn about each other's views.
I don't really care what she tells me. I'm not going to get mad at her, and I'm still going to care about her. So I think that was something that I felt right off the get-go, that, you know, it doesn't matter what you tell me or what you say or what you believe. I don't really care in the fact that it's not going to change my mind about who they are.
We try to listen fully and intently to one another, and then we try to paraphrase back, at least I do. I try to paraphrase back what I think I'm hearing. And sometimes I'll ask Karen, what did I just say? Can you please repeat back to me? Can you tell me what you think I just said?
And then she's surprised when I do.
I'm just wondering, what does that achieve? What does that do for the person listening to have their views reflected back at them?
It's a really great feeling. It's like, oh yeah, you heard me. Because we don't do that very often here in the States. I don't know if it's different elsewhere, but we're not very good listeners overall. And, you know, we're way more concerned about what we're going to say next.
I really enjoyed Karen Cotter's use of the phrase down and dirty conversations. Is any issue off limits?
It doesn't appear so, no.
We've talked a lot about racism and, you know, Black Lives Matter and about Donald Trump's mental status, specific things.
LGBTQs, we talked about that. And
oh, LGBTQ issues, I guess.
Yeah, and guns.
Guns, we've talked about guns. Yeah, so those, you know, we've talked about Amy Coney Barrett or Amy COVID Bearer, as one of my friends calls her.
COVID Bearer?
Yeah, it's a joke. Sorry, it's a joke.
It's kind of funny.
And yeah, I guess that's, can you think of anything else?
Can I just pick one issue and see what you both think of it? One of the biggest issues of the year is the Black Lives Matter movement and the way it was invigorated after the killing of George Floyd. How did you both approach that particular topic?
Oh, sure. Yeah, now, how much time do we have? The George Floyd thing was totally 100% awful. There's like no way in the world that that could be justified. But the Black Lives Matter is a different issue in that I'm not sure that everybody is in that organization for the same reason. I've looked at their website. They have a couple women that are Marxists that started it. And I'm not too happy about seeing something like that in our country. I definitely support Black lives or any life, but I just am not too thrilled about the organization because, you know, it may or may not be that they have been hijacked by radicals, and that's what led to the looting and the, you know, decimating of cities across our country.
As for what Karen was saying about Marxism, honestly, I don't know that much about Marxism. I think we throw so many terms around in our country that are hard to define. I feel like we have a lot of boogeymen type words, but we don't even always understand them fully. I think just, you know, understanding the history of Black America, the various ways that Black people in the country have been oppressed and marginalized, racist policies in housing, and of course, mass incarceration. Just so many things historically have happened in the country that having a Black Lives Matter movement now to try to address some of these institutional problems just seems to make a lot of sense.
It's pretty clear, isn't it, that they are far apart from each other in terms of the substance of what they are saying. Do they ever persuade each other on anything?
Well, what's interesting is neither of them could raise an issue on which they had persuaded each other, which shocked me a little bit.
I can't really think of anything really that we've changed on. I don't know.
There are two parts to this. One of them is persuasion, and that's a complicated question. The other part is just being able to forge relationships across this divide.
I just think it's the human element to it. You know, I think just friendship and relating to people is far more important than anything political. And I mean, over the course of our conversations, and hopefully they'll continue, if there's any way that Karen, you know, presents something that changes my mind, I'm okay with that.
That's kind of what's important here with us as we go throughout the coming days and months is us being able to build and maintain our relationships and understand one another because we're family, we're friends, we're neighbors, we're coworkers, and right now, boy, we've really lost sight of that.
I can completely see what the two Karens are trying to do here, and much of it is commendable. But you talked about two things, understanding and persuasion, and you said persuasion was complicated. But arguably, it is incredibly important on these big divisive questions. If we think about Black Lives Matter, for example, it was really interesting to hear the Karens have a conversation about that. But if we move away from them for a minute, this is a question that is fundamentally about racism, about the racist persecution of one group in America. Now, of course, it is always important to try to understand where the other side is coming from. But does there come a point where that just isn't possible, where views just cross the acceptability line, and really all you're left with is either to persuade the other person, or if that issue is fundamental to your values, walk away from the conversation or maybe even from the friendship?
Well, I think that's a question that people have to decide for themselves. If it were me and someone was not acknowledging a part of my humanity or was just abusive and offensive, then yeah, I'd probably just walk away. My view of this is that I don't think that listening to someone, understanding how they got to their views, is the same as endorsing or legitimizing those views. And Karen talked about that. She actually has these sorts of conversations with people that she knows.
There are people that are out and out racist that will just say a racist comment. And I know that that doesn't constitute their whole being. And that when the time is right, I can challenge those ideas and thoughts in a way that is thoughtful and not attacking. People are complex. You know, you just have to weigh out those factors of is this relationship one that I need, you know, that I want to have in my life, and you take it from there.
The alternative, which would be walking away from a conversation or breaking off the relationship, is that someone with racist or sexist views would never meet anyone who disagrees with them. They would never hear an opposing view, and they'd be pushed further and further into their enclave.
Coming up, will Karen Ward and Karen Cotter's friendship survive such a divisive election? Michael, you went back to the two Karens a couple of days after the election. How were they feeling?
Well, they both seemed really nervous, to me at least. I mean, they were describing behaving in a slightly unusual way.
I told Karen Ward that I ate a whole pan of lasagna.
For a change, I wasn't eating, but I was cleaning my house.
And as the results have become clearer, how have they dealt with that?
Karen Cotter talked about being totally overcome with emotion.
After Michigan was called, I broke down into tears because I was, you know, it was just a flood of what felt like relief.
Karen Ward deferred to God. She said that she'll go along with whatever he decides.
I just believe that God knows and he's in control. So,
but it was interesting in that she was focused on the various ways that she felt the vote had been suspicious. It felt like Donald Trump's narrative about voter fraud was really chiming with her.
There's over 22,000 votes in Philadelphia had been all for Biden, where there were none for Trump, which just seems kind of unusual that somebody, if nothing else, wouldn't make a mistake.
You know, they so perfectly represent, don't they, either side of this divide. A divide that we've seen from these results is huge. But they were two people who really wanted to bridge those divides. How optimistic were they that the divisions might start to heal?
Well, on that, they had very different views. Karen Ward, who supports Donald Trump, thought the division was actually going to grow a lot worse.
Yeah, I do believe that it's going to be worse because, you know, especially right now, there's definitely going to be half the people that are really upset and half, I mean, it's not even disappointment. I think it's going to be really upset one way or the other. And I don't think that either party president is going to be able to fix that. Sorry to be a downer, but that's my thought.
I think I disagree with that. There will be a tone set and a tenor set for the country that is more positive, more uniting, and there will be a lot of efforts in that regard.
I mean, it's really striking, isn't it, to hear that difference, to hear that Karen, who supported Trump and was ultimately on the losing side thinks divisions are going to get worse, whilst Biden supporting Karen is much more optimistic. Who do you think is right?
I think on the one hand, it's going to be very helpful to have someone like Joe Biden in office who isn't so politically focused on stoking that division. Because for Donald Trump, the big strategy was to turn out his base, to rile them up. And so for him, division actually made a lot of political sense. For Joe Biden, it's a lot less so. I mean, for him, it's about trying to at least present himself as a moderate figure, someone who can unite the country. And that, I'm sure, is going to be very helpful. But then I think the sources of division in American politics go far beyond the presidents. I mean, we can talk about the media, the fact that there are these cable TV networks who make a lot of money from attracting a certain kind of audience. Where is their incentive to bring people together? I think there's lots of businesses who, in the same way, make money from that division. You know, that polarization in the US is so deeply set that I think it's going to take a lot more than Donald Trump being outside the public spotlight and Joe Biden being in it to try to make it less intense, to make it more of a united country. I think I went into this story hoping to find something positive, something a little bit uplifting. And what the Karens have achieved is really impressive. It's something that is heartwarming. It's a really nice story. It shows you that it is possible to bridge these divides. But I've got to say, I walked away from it all a little bit more pessimistic, because what the Karens have built took time. It took a deliberate effort. They had to choose to try to forge this kind of relationship. And I think in 2020, there are just so many forces that are actually trying to do the opposite. They're trying to polarize people. They're trying to push them apart. And so I think the chances of people making the choice that the Karens did to try to depolarize, to try to get to understand how others are thinking, actually will be quite rare. And so the idea of people doing it across the country seems maybe not impossible, but at least unlikely.
So let's just return to the Karens to finish. Do you think their friendship is going to survive this?
Are you confident that your friendship will survive?
Yeah.
We said it together, so it may come out as one.
Yeah. Yeah, it will.
That was Michael Safi. My thanks to him and to Karen Cotter and Karen Ward. We really appreciate their time. For more information on Braver Angels, the organisation that the Karens joined, which works to bring people together from different political persuasions, go to braverangels.org. You can read all of our reporting on the US election at theguardian.com. I really enjoyed a feature by Ankita Rao, Oliver Lachland and Sam Levine on the race in Georgia, and especially the work of Stacey Abrams. Do have a read and do keep up with all the developments on the live blog with Joni Grieve. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Josh Kelly. Sound design was by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Nicole Jackson and Phil Maynard. We'll be back tomorrow.